time is 8:07. Currently at our studios on East Wausau Avenue in Wausau. Mostly sunny skies. Temperature stands at 70 degrees. It looks like it could be the hottest day so far of 2023, perhaps hitting 90 degrees before all is said and done this afternoon. I am Chad Holmes. It is the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Coming up on today's program, we will be joined at 8:15 a.m. by the man you just heard for a couple of hours. From 6 until 8 a.m. each and every weekday here on Bow Falls Radio and on the Civic Media Radio Network, Pat Kreitlow again. Pat with Up North News every weekday morning. We'll talk to Pat about what's been another very busy week as we continue the process towards the finish line involving the state budget. We'll talk about that and a whole bunch more coming up with Pat Kreitlow at 8:15. And then coming up at, sometime between 9:10 and 9:15. She usually comes in early. We get her on when she comes in here, but sometime after 9 o'clock, we'll have our monthly visit with the mayor of Wausau, Katie Rosenberg. The mayor was involved in an event on Tuesday here in Wausau with the governor and other members of state and local government as one of the first steps in terms of the budget process. The shared revenue bill and also education funding aspects of the state budget were signed into law by Governor Tony Evers. We'll talk to the mayor about what does it exactly mean? Because so often we hear about percentage increases and other aspects of the shared revenue bill. What does it mean? What will it ultimately mean for the city of Wausau and other municipalities in our area that this bill was signed? Does it catch us up on many years of falling behind in terms of shared revenue increases, and what can we expect in the future as well? So again, Mayor Katie Rosenberg will talk about that. We'll talk about some recent news headlines from around the city as well. The city council declined to support the mayor's proposal for a communications official. We'll discuss that. Why did she feel like the communications official was important? Is there any hope of changing that in the future? July 4th, big celebration as the city of Wausau has teamed up with other municipalities for a fireworks show and big celebration on July 4th. We'll get the information on that. And also, recently a sign has been put up at Riverside Park, notifying residents of potential danger from contaminated soil. What does that mean? What will be coming beyond that? We'll ask the mayor about that as well. And also, delays on construction at the Wausau Mall site. It looks as though that the construction is not going to begin until 2024. Going to ask the mayor what that means. What can we expect? Is there any reason for concern? And also, today, the lead story, as I had checked earlier this morning at Wausau Pilot and Review, is another story basically criticizing concerning Wausau water rates, the increase. We've talked about this in the past with the mayor, the increase in the water rates coming from about $292 annually to about $448, including the public fire protection charge. Going to, again, talk to the mayor about why this is occurring. Why is it important that we have clean water, which seems like a rather simple question, but still, when you see the complaints talking about, well, we can't pay for this increase. Well, again, why did this happen? We're going to go over that again and try to explain and make sure that the information is out there when we talk to Mayor Katie Rosenberg coming up, again, sometime between 9:10 and 9:15, and she'll spend much of the second hour of the program with us here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Also coming up later this hour, I'm going to step out of the local state aspect because yesterday, the United States House of Representatives, in a completely partisan vote, censured Representative Adam Schiff of California, claiming that he had been wrong in some way in his investigations of Donald Trump and Russian collusion in 2016. Going to hear the comments after the vote yesterday from Adam Schiff because I think it was historic. I think it's important to hear what Kevin McCarthy and Republicans, such as 7th District Congressman Tom Tiffany, voted for yesterday. I think it was vitally important. I think it was historical. And coming up just after the bottom of the hour, we're going to listen to comments of Adam Schiff and also talk about that issue. But we're going to take a quick 2-minute timeout and then come back and hear from the host of Up North News, our very own Pat Kreitlow, coming up next. I'm Chad Holmes. It's going to be a warm one, a hot one here in central Wisconsin. We will have complete details on it, potential of some much-needed rain this weekend as well. We'll get a chance to talk to our meteorologist, Jennifer Vuchitsky, coming up at 9:06. So a lot to come here on this Thursday edition of the Chad Holmes Show. Pat Kreitlow is coming up next. Chad Holmes with you on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. And Chad Holmes back with you here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. 70 degrees, plenty of sunshine to start off our Thursday. Again, it could be the hottest day we've seen so far this year. Could hit 90. We'll have more details with our meteorologist Jennifer Vuchitsky coming up a little bit later on. Also, again, in hour number two, we'll be joined by the mayor of Wausau, Katie Rosenberg, for her monthly visit. But right now, being Thursday at 8:15, and normally get done with your show, you want to sit back, chill out for a few minutes, but unfortunately for Pat Kreitlow, I've asked him to come back on the program and talk to us about what's been another very busy week in terms of issues. And Pat, number one, appreciate you coming on after finishing off another edition of Up North News.
Well, I'll tell you what, I actually get to do a little something different. Instead of working on prepping tomorrow's show, I've come outside. It's a gorgeous day. I can look over Lake Wasota. I've cracked open a cold soda after a couple of hours of hot coffee, and it's a real pleasure getting to visit with you today.
Absolutely, and I started off hip to be square because you said on your program earlier this morning, talking about process, and you said, well, sometimes other shows won't be talking, but I'm going to be proudly talking about process, being a nerd when it comes to government and to how things get done. And I really like that, because I do think that on one hand, when you do talk about process, and I think it was Joe Sapecki that you had on today saying, well, you're talking about process, you're not winning the argument. But I do think, especially in this era, and again, it just brought up this point I want to kind of start with, that we're seeing, I think, a lot more where process is actually important in terms of what's being done and what's trying to be accomplished by some of the actors within the political system.
Well, that's because, let me preface by saying, playing one of my favorite artists and one of my favorite songs by him was just wonderful. Thank you. You've already made my day. But in terms of, legislative process, again, look, it's not the kind of thing that gets most people jazzed up, but it does provide the foundation for pointing out to people that there are times when politicians either abuse their power, or maybe not to the level of abuse and corruption, but there's this level of hubris or arrogance that they think, the rules don't apply to them, and that they can, take shortcuts. And, when Republicans did that last week, when, here's the process part for folks that weren't familiar, when they take all of the old language out of an already existing bill in committee, one that's already had a public hearing, then they put in all new language and pass it out of committee without a public hearing, and say, well, that's good enough. What they're trying to do is sneak something through without public input. And in this case, it was a huge change in the way that we would fund technical colleges in Wisconsin. And I point that out just to say, look, again, it's a process, but it's a process that shows a level of arrogance that they don't think enough of their constituents to say, we're making this big change, and we want to know what you think about it.
What are they trying to accomplish there? Because I think that it's something that you've been very good about in terms of talking about, number one, the UW system funding, and also this technical college aspect. Because I think that as we move forward, the technical college and the technical college system is going to become more and more important. within our state, because of just the way I think that we're starting to get more of a focus on trying to, what Republicans talk about, put people, cogs into the machine of the economy. But at the same time, there are folks that just want to be able to get those skills in order to take advantage of some opportunities. What is the point of what was done? Because obviously, when you do something like that, you're trying to skirt, as you say, the process.
Especially because the change that they're proposing was essentially politicizing how we fund our tech colleges. And so let me explain to folks that the way we fund tech colleges is different than the way we fund the UW system. And the tech colleges, each one of them has a board that, you know, does come from the community. There's some accountability to people that live in the area. And as part of tech college funding, they, you know, have the authority to levy property taxes to help fund some of their operations. What this Republican measure would have done is say, nope, we're taking away your tax authority. We will replace it dollar for dollar with state aid. And then we, the legislature, we will decide in the future, the way that we do with the UW system now, what your level of funding is going to be. And so in the first year, yeah, dollar for dollar, no change. But what about the next year if a tech college takes on a program that some Republican legislator thinks is too woke, and now they're going to jeopardize tech college funding the way that they're doing with the UW schools? And the last point I'd make about it is to say that the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum looked at the difference between these two models. And the two-year tech colleges and other schools in Wisconsin are among the top five in terms of state support for their programs, whereas the four-year schools, the UW schools, are in the bottom eighth worst in the nation in terms of state support because it's been so politicized by the legislature. So making that kind of a change to the tech college, it's big, it's bad, and it deserved more public scrutiny than it otherwise would have received last week.
Again, we're talking to Pat Greitlow, host of Up North News, every weekday from 6 until 8 a.m. here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Tuesday, the governor paid a visit to my neck of the woods. He paid a visit to your neck of the woods as well, as he was traveling to sign the shared revenue and education funding aspects of the state budget. Coming up in the next hour, I'm going to try to get some specifics from Mayor Rosenberg about what it means for a community such as Wausau and other communities here in north central Wisconsin. It was in a sense celebrated on Tuesday by the governor and I think many members of state and local government. I know that we've talked about in the past about maybe some of the positives and not so much. I guess the question is, should we be having a celebration about this? Because you've been part of the process of negotiating and compromise within state government. How good of a deal is it, I guess, bottom line? Because I've been kind of moving around myself in terms of trying to decide, well, this was something that, you know, great move in the right direction. And then I think about, again, the amount of money that's been increased towards the voucher program and get a little annoyed by that. I guess in your, I think, unique point of view, how successful should, I think, those maybe that are supporters of Governor Evers and Lena a little bit towards the left-hand side be in terms of this deal?
Well, I don't like it normally when either politicians or talk show hosts say something along the lines of, I got it right. I believe I had that. I told you so. But it's pretty much what I was saying the moment Governor Evers won re-election last November, is that with a Republican legislature, if anything was going to get done, it was going to involve some trade-offs of things they otherwise would never do. And Governor Evers and Democrats would, in most times, never go along with a big funding increase for vouchers to go to private and religious schools that drain away resources from our public schools. But if that was going to be the price in order to get a significant upgrade in funding for public schools, cities, villages, towns, counties, then, as Joe Zepecki said on our program this morning, progressives who are unhappy with all the extra voucher money, you need to take the win. And the win is all the extra funding for those other layers that wouldn't have been there if they hadn't worked so hard to get Tony Evers reelected. If Tim Michaels were in the governor's office, we'd be having a very different conversation right now. So in that sense, this is a win, but, you know, progressives and public school advocates need to not take their eye off the ball and be mindful that whenever they're in a position of, you know, running the legislature again, that's the time we need to really rethink how much better we could be committed to public education rather than paying for it. Taxpayers in Wisconsin are paying for two parallel school systems. We can't afford it. We shouldn't have to afford it, but it's the deal that, you know, you could strike this year the way things are split.
And you were right. I think, you know, it's not breaking because you have been talking about it. Something else you've talked a lot about is the potential, you know, tax reform that the GOP wants to push through. We touched on it on Tuesday when I was on your program. Put on your Karnak hat yet again. Where do you think we're going to end up when it comes to taxes? As they have, and something else you said this morning, of talking about how you almost, there's a respect that the Republicans have been able to be patient instead, because what they love to do is cut taxes, and they did not do this first. They're kind of waiting towards the finish line of this entire process. What do you think is going to happen with taxes?
And I would again, you know, give credit to Joe Zepecki for saying this as well, that Republicans did not announce at the front end a, you know, great big tax cut. They waded through, you know, most of the budget process and are going to say, well, here's what's left of that $7 billion surplus, and it's going to go to tax cuts. And a whole lot of people, myself included, are going to rightly say, we could have done so much better. We could have invested so much more in our infrastructure, into making childcare affordable so that hardworking families don't have to make the painful decision to have one parent, you know, leave the workforce. We could have done a lot with it, but instead, we did get that big change in revenue sharing for the, you know, all the local units of government that provide such essential services. So let's accept that. And yes, Democrats can absolutely get behind tax cuts as part of the surplus. It's just that they probably won't be as targeted to the middle class as what Governor Evers proposed. They'll be much more targeted toward, you know, the wealthiest households. But still, if in the end what we get is increased funding for many things and a tax cut, we can quibble over which one should have had, you know, the higher proportion of that surplus put to use. But if on the whole it's a good thing, if it's a net positive, then we should accept that and, you know, just live to message another day what progressives would do differently if they were the ones in charge of the legislature.
And finally, I want to talk about Robin Voss's rhetoric. I mean, of course, the issue involving the UW system and his proposed funding cut, which is, you know, just amazing during the, again, this time of trying to figure out what to do with the surplus. But what do you think the point is of the rhetoric that we've seen from him? And I'm not just saying, you know, the line where I'm embarrassed to be a UW system graduate, but even on Tuesday, as during the event with the governor and the local and state officials, both here in Wausau, Chippewa Falls, and I think a couple of other spots around Wisconsin, some of the folks in Milwaukee are saying, well, we're going to file legislation because some of the home rule aspects are being, you know, trampled on by some of the we call either poison pills or the hurdles that have been put into this bill in order to help Milwaukee clear up some major financial difficulties. And I saw a quote from Voss that said, well, you can almost hear his tone where he talks down to certain people about how shouldn't waste time with frivolous lawsuits and just get to work in terms of fixing your problems in Milwaukee. When you listen to Voss and the rhetoric he has been putting out, and I would say since he had that close call in the Republican primary last year, where do you think Robin Voss is right now when in terms of his leadership of the Republicans in the Assembly and what he's trying to get across to the people of the state of Wisconsin?
All he's trying to get, he's really not changed that much from, you know, the far right fringe end of the political spectrum. He does try now and then to put on this veneer of moderation and leadership, but by and large his rhetoric gives it away. And when you're going after the University of Wisconsin system for a cut, just because you don't like that the UW is taking a stand against racial injustice, I mean, you're telling on yourself. And you're telling me that you're much more interested in catering to a political base than you are to serving all of the people of Wisconsin. And we don't need to say much more than you know, let Robin Voss's words speak for themselves. And I think most people, as seen in most surveys, are against things like, you know, racism and for things like funding, adequately funding education in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. Well, Pat, again, appreciate the time. Enjoy being outside, enjoying that ice cold soda, enjoying the best part of the day when it gets really hot around here in the afternoons. But again, you can listen to Pat Kreitlow 6 until 8 a.m. each and every weekday morning here on Bow Falls Radio and also the Civic Media Radio Network. But again, thanks for being back, being with us, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right, Chad, thanks so much.
That is Pat Kreitlow. So we're going to take a time out, have a civic news update coming up, also a CBS news update, and then we'll come back with more. Again, coming up a little bit later on, we'll be joined by WASA Mayor Katie Rosenberg just after 9 o'clock. I'm Chad Holmes, Chad Holmes Show here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.
Got nothing in my brain. That's what people say. That's what people say. I go on too many dates, but I can't make them stay. At least that's what people say. That's what people say. But I keep cruising. Can't stop, won't stop moving. It's like I got this music. Shake it off, shake it off. Heartbreak is gonna break, 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 break. And the
Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 to 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO. And on the Civic Media app. Again, if you have not got the Civic Media app, now is the time because we've just had some upgrades to the app, making it even better. So go to your app store, search Civic Media, download the Civic Media app, be able to tune into all the stations on the Civic Media Radio Network, have podcasts of our programs, also our sports broadcasts as well, all on the Civic Media app. Thanks again to Pat Kreitlow for joining us. Going to have Pat on a regular guest on Thursday mornings. Except for next week. I am off next week. Then I'll be back the first week of July. Coming up later in the program, we'll find out just how hot it will get today. We'll be joined by Jennifer Vuchiski from Weatherology at 9:06. And then right after that, we'll be talking to the mayor of Wausau, Katie Rosenberg, for her monthly visit coming up after the weather in the 9 o'clock hour. And I'm going to step away from what we normally discuss here in terms of local and state news, because I think there was a historical moment yesterday on the floor of the House of Representatives as the Republicans, who are in the majority in the House, voted to censure Democratic Representative Adam Schiff for his past actions while chair of the House Intelligence Committee in leading investigations into then-President Donald Trump. Oh, man. Of course he'd be censured by Republicans. He actually dared to investigate Donald Trump? The vote was entirely along party lines, with a California congressman calling the resolution false and defamatory. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy called Schiff to the well of the chamber as he read the censure resolution out loud. Democratic members shouted loudly as McCarthy began to read the resolution, causing him to stop and start several times. McCarthy said as he was interrupted by boos from Democratic members, "I have all night." The resolution claims Schiff misled the American public over the course of congressional investigations into the Trump campaign's potential ties to Russia, given that other probes have not found conclusive evidence that Trump colluded with Russia to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. Representative Anna Paulina Luna, a Republican of Florida, said yesterday ahead of the vote, Mr. Schiff exploited his position as chair of Intel Committee in every opportunity possible, threatening national security, undermining our duly elected president, and bringing dishonor upon the institution. Luna spearheaded the effort to censure Schiff. Wednesday's vote came a week after nearly two dozen Republican House members voted alongside Democrats to table a similar motion that would have imposed a $16 million fine on Schiff. Luna, give her credit, she never gives up. Well, she had an updated resolution, which instead censures him and refers him to the House Ethics Committee for a probe. And that brought the Republicans, those bastions of integrity, on board who did not support the measure last week. Schiff, who gained national recognition during his participation in the Trump probes, including as lead manager during Trump's first impeachment trial, is a frequent target of Republicans and Trump himself. Well, if you thought that that vote yesterday was going to make Adam Schiff cower in the corner, that was not the case. And I wanted you to hear what Adam Schiff said on the floor of the House of Representatives last night after Kevin McCarthy pushed through that censure vote. Here is what Adam Schiff had to say in response after the vote as he spoke to the members of the House of Representatives.
To my Republican colleagues who introduced this resolution, I thank you. You honor me with your enmity. You flatter me with this falsehood. You, who are the authors of a big lie about the last election, must condemn the truth tellers, and I stand proudly before you. Your words tell me that I have been effective in the defense of our democracy, and I am grateful. And yet this false and defamatory resolution comes at a considerable cost to the country and to the Congress. At a moment when millions of people in our home state of California are unable to find a place to live or afford a place to live, Speaker McCarthy chooses to occupy the resources of Congress for two straight weeks on this hollow sop to the MAGA crowd. He offers nothing to those who are homeless or addicted to opioids or to millions of college students mired in debt, but this paltry distraction. Donald Trump is under indictment for actions that jeopardize our national security, and McCarthy would spend the nation's time on petty political payback, thinking he can censure or fine Trump's opposition into submission. But I will not yield, not one inch. The cost to the Speaker's delinquency is high, but the cost to Congress of this frivolous and yet dangerous resolution may be even higher, as it represents another serious abuse of power. Donald Trump has threatened that any of you that defy him and vote against this partisan resolution will be met by a primary challenge. And he calls for my imprisonment. If a transient majority can punish and attempt to silence members who hold a corrupt president to account, there is no telling what further corruption of office will follow. And I say this to Speaker McCarthy and others who wish to gratify Donald Trump with this act of subservience or bend to his demands. Try as you might to expel me from Congress or silence me with a $16 million fine, you will not succeed. You might as well make it $160 million. You will never deter me from doing my duty. No matter how many false justifications or slanders you level against me, you but indict yourselves. As Liz Cheney said, there will come a day when Donald Trump is gone, but your dishonor will remain. This resolution attacks me for initiating an investigation into Trump campaign solicitation and acceptance of Russian help in the 2016 election. Even though the investigation was first led not by me, but by a Republican chairman. It would hold that when you give internal campaign polling data and your polling data to a Russian intelligence operative, while Russian intelligence is helping your campaign, as Trump's campaign chairman did, that you must not call that collusion, though that is its proper name, as the country well knows. It would fine me for the costs of the critically important Mueller investigation into Trump's misconduct, even though the special counsel was appointed by Trump's own attorney general. It would reprimand me over a flawed FISA application as if I were its author, or I was the director of the FBI, and over flaws only discovered years later and by the Inspector General, not Mr. Durham. In short, it would accuse me of omnipotence, the leader of some vast deep state conspiracy, and of course, it is nonsense. But here is the real gravamen of my offense. I led the first impeachment of Donald Trump for one of the most egregious presidential abuses of power in our history. And I led a trial which resulted in the first bipartisan vote to remove a president in history. And I would do so again. I warned that if Trump was not held accountable, he would go on to try to cheat in even worse ways in the next election. And he did, inciting a violent attack on this very Capitol. And after that, I participated in some of the most important hearings in congressional history, hearings that exposed Donald Trump's incitement of a dangerous insurrection to prevent the peaceful transfer of power. My colleagues, if there is cause for censure in this House, and there is, it should be directed at those in this body who sought to overturn a free and fair election. The question, my Republican colleagues, is not why am I the subject of this false resolution for doing my constitutional duty, but why are you not? Why are you not standing beside me, the subject of a similar rebuke for speaking the truth? Why did you not stand up to Donald Trump? Why did you not reject his immorality? Why did you not condemn his dishonesty? Why did you not speak out when his horde attacked this Capitol? Or now, when he treats the nation's secrets with such carelessness, lawlessness, and disdain? Why did you hide from efforts to hold him accountable? Why were you silent, afraid, unwilling to do your ethical, constitutional duty? Why did you cower? Why did you cower? And why do you still? Will it be said of you that you lack the courage to stand up to the most immoral, unlawful, and unethical president in history, but console yourselves by attacking those who did? Today, I wear this partisan vote as a badge of honor, knowing that I have lived my oath, knowing that I have done my duty to hold a dangerous and out-of-control president accountable, and knowing that I would do so again in a heartbeat if the circumstances should ever require it. I thank you, and I yield back.
Representative Adam Schiff, after the National Republicans in the House of Representatives censured him, because they felt like he was being unfair to Donald Trump. Investigations into then President Donald Trump. Again, outstanding. I wish I could have had a camera that was showing Kevin McCarthy listening to that, because it's ridiculous. And the Florida Congresswoman, Anna Paulina Luna, spearheading this. I mean, come on. The last time that the House voted to censure a member was in 2021. It was not because somebody had the gall to investigate Donald Trump. It was a formal rebuke to Arizona Republican Representative Paul Gosar. And he is a racist, anti-Semitic, far-right MAGA. Well, he posted an anime-style video on social media that depicted the killing of Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York. So you have that, and now you have Republicans censoring a man for investigating, with great evidence, a president that has been flaunting the rules for the entirety of his adult life. So I just thought that, again, I think that will be a piece of audio that when we look back at the time, the Trump era, that it's going to be listened to in the future. I think very, very interesting indeed. The time is coming up on 8:48. We're going to take a quick break and then come right back. I'm Chad Holmes here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bowfallsradio.com, and mobile devices by searching WX.
Call me a joker, call me a fool.
Chad Holmes Show on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. The time is 8:51, Thursday morning, heading towards the weekend. Could be a bit of a wet weekend. We'll get the details with our meteorologist, Jennifer Vuchiski, coming up after the news at 9:06. And then after that, we'll be joined by WASA Mayor Katie Rosenberg. So plenty to come here on this Thursday morning. The first full day of summer. It's going to feel like the first full day of summer. Of course, we were on the air when summer officially began yesterday morning at 9:58 a.m. Central Time. So again, happy summer to all of you. And the boys of summer, the baseball crew, the Milwaukee Brewers, they fell yesterday to the Arizona Diamondbacks by a score of 5-1 at American Family Field. Arizona takes 2 out of 3 in the series. The Brewers very fortunate to come from a 4-run deficit on Tuesday night in order to get just 1 win in that series. The Brewers are now 1.5 games behind the National League Central Division leaders. Yeah, the Cincinnati Reds. Unbelievable turnaround for the Cincinnati Reds. They have now won 11 games in a row after beating Colorado. So the Brewers still right there. I mean, despite Cincy winning those 11 straight, the Brewers 1.5 games behind the Reds in the NL Central. Yesterday was another great performance. But you talk about a guy that is just incredibly unlucky. Julio Teheran. He's pitched great baseball since coming over to Milwaukee. He is now, yesterday, he pitched 5 scoreless innings. He now has an earned run average of 1.53, which is tied for the lowest mark by a starting pitcher through their first 6 starts with the Brewers in franchise history. But, boy, he is just not getting any offensive support at all. I mean, he has gone at least 5 innings, allowed 2 earned runs or fewer each time out, but the record is not showing it because the Brewers, in his offensive performances, have not been able to put up any offense. And the offense has continued to be the problem basically when the Brewers have struggled this year. The Brewers have one of the top starting pitching rotations in the National League, but have not been able to get the hits when they need them. And Craig Counsell said, we scored 1 run. We've got to do better than that. The Brewers' offense just has not been able to do enough. The 6 starts that Teheran has had, and as I said, a 1.53 ERA, never allowing more than 2 runs in a game. They are 2-4 in those games as a team. I mean, the thing is, you got to take advantage of that, and the Brewers have not been able to do so. So Milwaukee's number 3 through number 6 hitters in the lineup, those number 3 through number 6 hitters in the lineup yesterday, they are collectively 33 for their last 208. A dismal 159 average during that time frame. Terrible. Brutal. So, again, the Brewers just need to get the offense going. But as we've talked about in the past, not really any thoughts that they're going to. It just feels like right now the Brewers offensively have just not been able to put the pieces in the right spots to expect these guys to turn it around. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Still right there in what's been a very poor National League Central Division up to this point. Also in sports yesterday, the Milwaukee Bucks here in the summer, some news. Chris Middleton has decided to forego his $40.4 million option in test free agency. And it's not a surprise. People say, oh, how can you turn down a $40.4 million option? Well, the odds are he wants to have a more long-term contract. He is a veteran. He's been with the Bucks now for 10 seasons. He wants to have, I think, more of a long-term contract. And right now, if you wait another year, perhaps his leverage is not as great because he's another year older. And so Chris Middleton has decided to become a free agent. It does not mean he won't return to the Bucks. In fact, I still think it's probably likely that Chris Middleton will be back with the Bucks for yet another contract. And it also could help the Bucks ultimately. It could help Middleton, and it could help the Bucks because you could have a lower salary for the upcoming season, give the Bucks some more wiggle room to re-sign free agent center Brook Lopez, and also not immediately soaring into the newly created second tax apron, which would hamper the team's future roster-building ability. So this could be a win-win situation. Middleton could get more of a long-term contract, but at a lower average salary and a lower salary for next season to help the Bucks in terms of they're in a tight spot. I mean, right now it's going to be difficult for the Bucks not to be in that second tier of the tax apron, which has some very stiff penalties under the new collective bargaining agreement. But also for Middleton, there's a bit of risk. He's coming off some injury both the last couple of years. He's coming off right knee surgery following the Bucks' first-round playoff exit, and he played in just 33 games last season after missing time at the start of the season due to rehab for a left wrist surgery and then more time in the middle of the year due to right knee soreness. So you got the left wrist, the right knee, and now the surgery on the right knee. So there's question marks. And despite that, there is a computer ways of trying to figure out how much somebody is worth. USA Today property Hoops Hype has reported Middleton's market is in the range of $130 million over the next 4 years. So, again, there could be a win-win situation. He will be 32 years old in August. He has a 17 points per game scoring average. And before last season's injury-shortened campaign, he's been consistent. He's been consistently the Bucks' second-best player behind Giannis from 2017 to 2022, averaging 20 points per game. And he was the best scorer for the Bucks in the playoffs. In the Bucks' playoff loss to Miami, he averaged nearly 24 points, 6.5 rebounds, and more than 6 assists. So in a disappointing 5-game loss to Miami, Middleton did play very, very well for the Bucks. So, again, it will be interesting to see if the Bucks and Chris Middleton can work out something that does become a win-win for both parties. It's time for a top of the hour news break. We're going to have CBS News at the top of the hour. Brittany Merlot will be back with Civic Media Radio News as well. And then we'll be back with our weather update with Jennifer Vucicki from weatherology.com. I'm Chad Holmes. It is the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.